Welcome to the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference Podcast. This podcast features a session presented by James Hilton, Vice President and CIO at the University of Virginia. His session is entitled, In the Hot Seat, Phasing Out Public Computing Labs.
So they asked me if I would do this hot seat session on closing the public computing labs, and I said, oh, well, that sounds interesting. And they said, you know, it's in the interest of making it a little more lively and all that kind of stuff. And I said, okay, that's great, that's great. So I get here yesterday and I said, so how are the hot seat sessions going? And they said, you know, we think they're going really well. Think of it like Shark Tank. And so I think what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to think of this as the Shark Tank, and I'm going to chum around myself a little to begin with. So let me give you just a little context, and then I'll take whatever questions you want. So the context is, 99% of our students arrive with laptops. If they don't have one, we provision it unless they tell us no. In the last 4 years, we did have one student who said, I don't do technology in any shape or form, keep it. 30% of the class of 2012 arrived with mobile smartphones. The number this year is going to be much higher than that. And here's the killer one. In 2008, lab machine use was 651,000 hours. Of that, 619,000, or 95%, was devoted to ubiquitous commodity software. So 95% is for Microsoft Word and browsing, basically. And 5% is used for specialized software like MATLAB, Eclipse, MathCAD, and SPSS. 95% for commodity that they already have on the computers they already own, the laptops that they already own, and only 5% on specialized software. So it was my position, and remains my position, that we have to phase the public computing labs out. We can't afford them. Why? Well, at some level, because I believe I have as clear a case as I can make for a high-profile, very popular service. Gate counts on the public computing labs, way up there. Students love it. But if I can't cut in an area where I can make a compelling case that all the public computing lab is convenient. Not essential, it's now just convenient. If I can't make an argument above me, laterally, and to the campus, that in the budget times when we see dramatic reduction in support from the state, dramatic reductions in endowments, pressure to keep tuition low, unless I want to stop provisioning any new service, I have to be able to shut down the things that are only convenient. So, bring it on.
So, my question is, you talked about the difficult issues with software licensing. What do you do with that 5% that you still have to support for the specialized software that's too expensive for a student to purchase?
So a couple of things. The first is how much of that really boutique software remains out of the stack? And the answer is not as much as we thought when we started this, and less every day. And I would love to bring Adobe to the table and actually get them to help license this. So the first answer is, I think that, in fact, this is mobility is going to be part of the pressure. Creating an environment where people can have access to anything, anytime, anywhere, and responding to that environment is a force that's working for us in this space. So this was a directional bet, is the first thing. Second thing is, if we find that, in fact, there's critical pieces of software that students still have to have access to that they can't afford to buy, remember, your typical chemistry textbook probably costs $130, so $99 for an Adobe Creative Suite is not out of the realm of possibility in their cost structure. But if there's software that we know we still need to provide and we can't virtualize it, we will provide a small number of machines dedicated to that specialized software, which means that it's going to be more inconvenient for them to come to, but we're reducing the number of sites. We've cut over the last 2 years. We've cut the number of public sites in half. We haven't cut the machines yet down in half because we kept the largest ones are the last ones that we'll start phasing out. So our plan is to continue to provision public labs, but they will be devoted to specialized software, not to commodity software. Yes?
Hi, I'm trying to do the same thing you're doing here in California. Have you saved any money?
Have we saved any money? Unclear yet. Remember that the original framing of this was around mobility. And when the budget crunch hit, I could immediately say, well, we can save $300,000, but we're going to have to offset that with the cost of virtualizing, and we will also probably incur some increase in software licensing. The management side of it goes way down because we're not managing hardware anymore. We're just managing the virtual environment, which we did two different pilots on two different platforms. And the pilot that we ran last semester, which had approximately 875 students in it, we found that environment actually, which was a VMware environment, really easy to manage. I think I'm going to save a little bit of money. What I really think I'm going to save are lost opportunity costs. Because I'm going to now be able to take people who do nothing except keep machines that 95% of the time do exactly what the students already have. They can do other more interesting things, things closer to the research and teaching mission of the university.
Okay, so the second question I have is, what are you doing for classrooms where instructors are using and teaching MATLAB or SPSS?
Well, for their world, because it's virtualized, it gets better. So they have access to all of that there. There are some pieces of software where the demand is going to be too high, the load will be too high, and we'll keep a small number of teaching labs in place.
So obviously we see a push around campuses for the Learning Commons model with collaborative spaces, and that usually includes technology and everything. How does that fit into your plan? Do those get to still exist with this sort of idea?
I would say that our move enables that as a possibility but does not determine it, because in fact I don't own or control the space. So as we phase the public computing labs out, we return the space to the provost, and the provost gets to decide what the highest priority is for it. We have, in partnership with the library, taken some of the spaces where we had public computing labs, and we've created much more collaborative spaces with the principle of put the hardware in there that they don't have access to. It's hard to carry a 50-inch display screen around for collaborative purposes. So, in fact, before we framed it around budget, the whole goal on our end was to start to enable these collaborative spaces. I mean, watch what happens. And if you watch how students work in public computing labs, a lot of it is drop in, again, very convenient, check my email, try to print something, do go on. What we want to enable is actually places where they can come together and collaborate and work on projects. But again, I don't control the space. But as long as I keep saying we have to have those machines in there, it won't be used for anything else.
Thank you.
Yep.
What are you going to do about printing, especially assignments that have to be printed out for teachers or reference material or lab handouts that students need for, like, chemistry classes?
So there's a part of me that wants to give the flip Shark Tank answer, which is I'm going to do the same thing for it that I do for making sure they have gas in their automobile to make it to class. I mean, I'm going to say it's their responsibility, but we're not actually that heartless. I don't actually run the printing, but we have a printing service on grounds that runs it, and they've deployed a wireless connector so that students can print directly from their laptops, and it's working pretty well.
Can you talk about how your deans and or faculty have reacted to this move?
So one of the things that I find interesting is there's a lot of smoke around. There's actually been very little substantive heat. So some faculty have come and talked with me. Some deans have come and talked with me. They've expressed their concerns. When I've told them what we're actually doing and why we're doing it, they leave as an ally. I mean, in an unconstrained world, I'd like to have collaboration spaces rich in technology that are in high demand. I'd like to have a virtualized environment where I can deliver anything to them anywhere. I'd like to have that all. But I don't live in an unconstrained world. They don't live in an unconstrained world. And I think the thing that was the most surprising to me was the assumption that we were in fact stupid, that we were going to turn the labs off no matter what, that we had made an arbitrary budget decision, and that we were convinced, come hell or high water, that we were going to turn the labs off. That was one reaction that surprised me, and I said, well, we're doing this because we believe the technology is there to support a move. And if that turns out to be wrong, if there is, in fact, huge demand for software that we can't provision any other way, we will revise our plan. We will do that. I think the other toughest conversation that I had to have, not so much with deans, but sometimes with their IT leads, was to try to plead with them. They would say, well, if you shut this down, then we have to do it. And I would go, for the love of God, don't do that. I'll take the heat. I can be the dunce who's shutting these down. If you open them, it's on your head. Take this opportunity to not do that. And that was a hard conversation sometimes to have.
Student support. When you have no labs, you have no place to put your support staff unless you're going by phone or you open up some kind of service center somewhere. How are you going to handle that sort of thing?
We actually never use the public computing labs for that kind of support. There are specialized facilities. The library, for example, has several facilities that are dedicated towards digital tools in the humanities, for example, GIS and media creation and editing, and those all stay where they are. Those are not, again, these commodity public computing labs, and their support stays in place.
One of the challenges we're finding is more of the licensing. I just looked at the list that you guys overcame. How are you able to navigate through all the licensing challenges for your virtual environment?
Mostly by being relentless. I have a lead software licensing person. He's relentless. He just keeps going, and we use every opportunity we have with the vendors to make the case. And the case that we try to make is not give us a better deal. The case that we try to make is that it's about direction and mobility, and you have to be there. And so we try to bring them in on that.
We've done the Learning Commons module. We're working towards mobility and licensing strategies, but our general purpose labs are a combination of open lab space for students drop-in as well as teaching facilities. Mm-hmm. So our faculty are pushing back saying, you know, you want us to use technology more in our classroom environment, so why are you taking away the spaces that we can actually teach in? Any suggestions or strategies that you have for us?
You know, when I think about the times when people mostly need teaching labs, it's actually a relatively small number of classes that need that, and it's usually driven by specific disciplines. So I'll tell you that the engineering school, they have labs independent of the public computing labs that they maintain and teach in. When you say we're closing the public computing labs, people assume that that means we're shutting down every terminal on campus, and that's obviously not the case either. The other thing that we did was to try to make at least a low level of technology pretty ubiquitously present. So even in the worst classrooms that we have, we put a fairly standard projector. We rode commodity pricing on projectors.
Wired computer labs are sometimes a good way of keeping a lot of video traffic off of your wireless network. What did you have to do with your wireless network so they would have an equally high experience?
So other things that we have done along the way that made this possible is we have increasingly and aggressively beefed up our wireless network. We are on the verge of having to do that yet again. Again, part of the assumption is that I'd like to think that classroom video is what's driving the video traffic on my campus. We've been aggressively beefing up the wireless infrastructure. The other thing that we did, which was also probably more among faculty than students that was controversial, was we did go with a Microsoft campus-wide license. Again, part of the goal was to make some set of software ubiquitously available no matter what. It was, for the students, a deal. And for the campus, it was actually a deal. So there's a place where we actually did save money over what we were paying by the drink versus what we paid when we went to a campus-wide license. But, again, that helped.
You mentioned there are going to be computers still available on campus for student use, and it occurs to me that on my campus we've got 35,000 students, and we have some labs for the departments, like you mentioned, engineering. Our student government set up its own lab, and only members of the Associated Students Organization get access to it. The library often is organizationally a separate unit. So at your organization, are you still going to have commodity software available for students who just need to hang out for a while in the library or in those other types of units?
Well, so I don't control those other kinds of units, and they'll make decisions. What there won't be is there won't be any public computing labs that my organization supports that has that commodity. I might talk about the library. If you ask me, where was the reaction the harshest? It was within my organization, and it was within the library. This perception that how could we do this? Don't we care about students? And in the library, aren't we just shifting the burden to the library? One of the places, though, that the library decided to go along with this is the library has also reduced the number of public commodity terminals that they supported, because they support some on their own. I was in the library the other day, and the university librarian came up to me, and she said, you know, I was just walking through the library, and what I saw was there are just as many people as there ever were, and they're still working, but they're working on their devices. They're not working on these things that we had chained and bolted down. And the library is moving pretty aggressively at how do you start to reconfigure libraries to, again, foster that atmosphere of collaboration and conversation and all those things that drew us to the academy.
We're going through very similar processes at my university, but one thing I haven't really heard you mention or talk about is the option of still having hardware but going thin client or zero client. I was just kind of curious your thoughts on that.
Why do that when they already have the hardware?
Sure.
The argument that at some level does worry me the most is on any given day, the number of students whose computers have been hosed because of viruses is a non-trivial number. Mm-hmm. I console myself that after they leave the warm embrace of the university, they're going to be on their own, and maybe they'll learn some skills along the way to deal with that environment. So we didn't decide to do that.
Are other places on the campus going to be using thin clients, some of those areas that, as you said, you don't have control over?
So one of the things that's really starting to get interesting is thinking about what we might do for staff and faculty and all the rest. I mean, if you start to think about this virtualized environment's pretty peppy. So what I like about the virtualized world as opposed to the managed desktop world is that in the virtualized world, we basically say, well, you're going to come into us from your machine, however the hell your machine is, and we're going to control that environment while you're connected to us for that purpose. But when you're not there, you can do whatever you want with that machine so that it avoids some of the problems that come with devices that are either thin client or presume that you're only going to be working in a virtualized environment.
Are you doing any hands-on instruction through the virtualized environment where the students are using their own machines, or essentially are all hands-on instruction classes still taught in facilities that have university-provided machines?
I mean, I did facetiously when I first started getting interviewed by the student newspaper about how could we possibly do this and why would we do this, was to make the point that if you have this virtualized environment and it's available anywhere and they're carrying their laptops anywhere, it actually opens the possibility. In the same way that you don't have to schlep to do your homework, you don't have to schlep to go to that class. You can do that class in a much more vanilla environment. But I don't know the answer to that.
We've been nervous about whether in a 50-minute class how much time the faculty member is going to spend getting the student's machine in a position of where they can start the hands-on instruction part. So I just was wondering whether you had any information about that.
The students really didn't find it very challenging to figure out how to get into the virtual environment and make it work. So that startup time, you know, in the same time when you first, I remember being one of the first people to use a digital projector. Every day it was a crapshoot. And I would show up early for class every day to make sure it happened. Obviously, I didn't do that today. I got here just moments before and counted on it working. And I think the virtual environment's going to be there very quickly.
Might I respond to that as well? In my class, I tell my students that they better make sure that their laptops are powered and they can get access to the network. Because the fact is that if they were going to do gaming that day, they'd make sure that their laptops were powered and they needed access to the network. So that we have a ResNet. If they can't get access to the network, they can take it to ResNet for support. So the point is that for the faculty, it's all about classroom management and dealing with your students and requiring them to bring the appropriate tools to class and make sure that they're ready.
I agree. And the thing that I think makes that hard is that we, as universities, are conflicted about whether we're paternalistic or treating them as independent adults with consequences. So I agree. So can I, just as an exit, the things that I think are really important about this is notice the importance of framing. If I framed it as mobility, people loved it. If I framed it as cost savings, they didn't like it at all. I think mobility is key. The question that IT organizations need to be asking themselves is, what are you going to stop doing? I would argue that it is as strategically important, maybe more important, figuring out what we're going to stop doing as it is what we're going to do next. Doing the next thing, provided you have the resources, is always easy. There are technical challenges, there are user support challenges, there are all those kinds of things, but for an IT organization, doing new things is cool. Figuring out how to stop doing things that no longer are adding value is really hard. Hard for individuals to decide, hard for organizations to decide, but in an era of constraint, it's where most of what I assume are going to be my degrees of freedom to do new things, that's where it's going to come from.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.